My guest at this time is Virginia Republican Congressman Rob Whitman. He represents the Old Dominion's 1st Congressional District. He is a member of the House Armed Services Committee and chairman of the Readiness Subcommittee. In light of those positions and, of course, him being representative in one of the most military-heavy states in the country, we want to get the congressman's insights on the administration's proposed cuts in military spending. And, sir, thanks so much for being with us.
Greg, it's great to be with you.
The headlines were all over the place just a day or two ago. We saw that the number of active-duty troops will be down to their lowest level since just before World War II, about 440,000 to 450,000 in the Army, reductions elsewhere, as well as in weapons programs. Overall, some are saying this is a responsible step, given that we're basically going to be done with the two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the modern weapons are available to handle most of the load now. Others say this is just reckless. Where do you come down?
I think that there are deep concerns about the nature of these reductions, the scope of these reductions, and then doing this without clearly elaborating what our national strategy is. As you know, Greg, we've gone from a position of a national strategy of being able to fight and win a war on two fronts to going to a strategy of fighting a war on one front and holding serve on another front to today, where we are currently with the state of readiness, is being in a spot where all we can do is to fight and win a war on one front. And then to take that position and further degrade that in these different ways, I think is extraordinarily problematic. And I want to make sure that we have from the Secretary how he believes this allows the country to achieve a military strategic objective. And I want to know what that is. It's not clear to me even what the objective is. And I'm concerned about the pace at which we're reducing forces, what happens with how we maintain readiness. Now, the Secretary says, oh, this is going to help us heighten readiness. But if you're getting rid of troops that have that level of experience, tell me how that creates the capability to meet the challenges out there. To me, you know, we have now a force that has had 12 years of experience in an area of conflict, and then we're taking that force and now reducing it. How does that level of experience going out the door help us? I just don't see that, and you don't replace that with automated systems. You don't replace that with drones or with unmanned underwater vehicles. I don't care what the technology is. Technology is fantastic. It's a great enabler, but it does not replace the human being. And while those types of systems allow you to multiply your force, it doesn't replace the force. And my concern is going too quickly down the path of saying, well, it's just as simple as replacing people with technology. And we've seen time after time after time historically where when we go into that mode in our reset after we come out of conflict, we have done that one thing with 100% certainty, and that we've always gotten reset wrong after coming out of conflict. If you look at it post-World War II, post-Korea, and post-Vietnam, we cannot repeat those mistakes of the past.
Congressman, a lot of this, of course, has to do with money, and so let's talk about that a little bit, because obviously, a lot of the sequester cuts were aimed at the military. That was the agreement introduced by the president and approved in both chambers of Congress. Late last year, early this year, we saw a new budget which kind of relaxed some of those sequestration rules, and a lot of Republicans got behind it because it was supposed to be beneficial towards the military. So how much is sequestration still a factor here?
Well, it's still a factor, Greg, in 2016. Now, we have put the sequester off through gained savings both this year and next year, but it comes right back into play in 2016. And what I want people to understand is that the military is the only place in the budget where, in law, we have put this magnitude of cuts in the Budget Control Act, both of 2010 and 2011. The sequestration cuts, and remember, this most recent budget only replaced about half of those cuts. Previous to that, Secretary Gates put in place about $280 billion of voluntary cuts. Next, there were $497 billion of cuts in the next Budget Control Act of 2010, and then the Budget Control Act of 2011 was where the sequester cuts came in. If you add all of that up, it comes up to be $1.3 trillion over 10 years, and by any measure, that is catastrophic to our military. You can't approach that glide slope or reduction and expect to maintain the capability necessary in our force. And remember, this is the only place in the budget where that magnitude of cuts have taken place. And if you look at the areas of spending elsewhere in the budget that have increased dramatically, the autopilot spending programs, Medicare and Social Security, increasing exponentially. You cannot manage a budget just by saying, well, we'll go in and cut the military. You cannot balance the budget on the backs of men and women that serve this nation. And if you cut out every penny of discretionary spending, including all of the military, you'd still be about $500 billion short of closing the deficit. So this, if anything, highlights that we have gone far enough, in fact, I would argue too far on the military side, and highlights that we have to get to the other critical areas of the budget, i.e. the autopilot spending programs of Medicare and Social Security, to really get at the crux of how to reduce the deficit and therefore the debt.
Congressman, I'm guessing different members with different constituents have different priorities when it comes to military programs, but when you look at this list of the planes and so forth, the U-2, the A-10 Warhawks, and all sorts of other things that are either being called to be scrapped or to be replaced or to be modernized or whatever, what do you make of that part of the list, and how responsible do you think it is?
Well, I want to make sure that there's a strategic and tactical reasoning behind why we would get rid of these particular programs. Now, I understand the U-2 being a manned aircraft and the Global Hawk being an unmanned aircraft, but I would like to see the analysis about how that creates the best value for the nation and assures our strategic superiority. The same with the A-10, which is a very reliable air-to-ground combat platform that assures that there's support for our ground troops. That close air support is critical, and it's a tremendously valuable platform. I want to understand what's going to replace it, how do we see the savings coming about, and how do we make sure that those savings aren't to the detriment of those troops on the ground relying on that air support. Another element are aircraft carriers, which is the central foundational part of our Navy strategy. Those aircraft carriers as the foundation of our carrier strike groups. As you know, the money in the budget takes us through 2015 in assuring that we continue in building carriers and refueling them. But if sequestration goes into effect in 2016, the George Washington, which is slated to be refueled, and that they get those aircraft carriers get refueled halfway through their expectant lives, which is 50 years, there's still 25 years left in the George Washington. If the sequester goes back into place, there will not be the money to fuel the George Washington, and we will take an active nuclear aircraft carrier and mothball it. Now, we have never done that in history. We've never taken a ship with that kind of life left and with that need for that ship and mothballed it. So that's another area that I think is problematic in looking at what further sequestration reductions would do in the year 2016.
Couple more questions with Virginia Congressman Rob Whitman, member of the House Armed Services Committee, chairman of the Readiness Subcommittee. Sir, a lot of conservatives obviously concerned about this. Some have said this shows naivete on the part of the administration or just a troubling philosophy that he does not necessarily believe in a robust military. Do you believe those complaints are accurate?
I think there's some reflection of those complaints in what we saw from Secretary Hagel. And the reason I say that is this: we understand very clearly that our, and that is the nation and the governing elements of this government, both the executive branch and legislative branch, have a constitutional responsibility under Article 1, Section 8 to provide for the national defense. And we need to make sure that we stand up to that responsibility. Secondly, too, if you look at what's projected by the administration, you notice that the cuts are on the side of the military, but they also propose expansion of spending in other areas of government. So if this was a serious effort to really reduce spending, then the spending reductions would take place elsewhere, and they would also have as part of that a serious proposal about how to reduce spending in the autopilot spending programs. But instead, the proposals that were there last year are absent this year, so there's not even an effort to try to contain or manage spending within Medicare and Social Security. There's also an increase of spending in other areas of the budget, which tells me that they're looking at this from a political perspective, and that is, how do we go to areas where there may be political bases that need to be satisfied by increasing spending there, yet we're going to do that on the backs of the men and women that serve this nation? And as I talk to our great men and women that serve, they tell me this. They say, Rob, listen, we don't mind coming to the table to look at reductions in the military, but it can't be the only place in the budget where those attentions are being gained. And I can tell you from this perspective is that I believe that they are spot on. They want to make sure that if we're going to be reducing budgets, that we reduce them top to bottom in every area of the budget. Remember, the military is the only place where we've had significant cuts in the law. All the other areas of the budget have, for the most part, remained untouched. So this just shows that this is more of a political exercise, and it is truly a serious effort to look at the budget top to bottom and make those tough decisions about how we manage the finances of the nation. And it also shows, too, that there is not, I believe, the kind of attention necessary to look at where we need to be with military readiness and making sure that our forces are properly constructed for the challenges they'll face in the future.
I heard the voting buzzers. I know you got to go in one sentence or so. Do you think this will pass the House?
I do not think so. I think there's a vast amount of skepticism and constructive criticism on how we address this nation's military needs going forward. I think this will have an almost impossible time getting through the House.
Congressman, we appreciate your time very much. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much, Greg.
You bet. Virginia Republican Congressman Rob Whitman, member of the House Armed Services Committee, chairman of the Readiness Subcommittee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.